Good morning, it's Good Friday, and to Christians all over the world, this is the most significant day of the year. It's the day when we remember how Jesus suffered, the price that he paid to buy our forgiveness and our redemption. And I suppose if this is the most significant day of the year, then in this day there is a moment more significant than any other, and I want to suggest to you that it's that moment when Jesus cried out into the universe, "It is finished," a statement which his enemies must have thought was his admission of failure. But we know that actually it was Jesus declaring to the universe that he had completed the task that his Father had set him, so that mankind could be brought back into relationship with his Father. A few years ago, I had a vision on Good Friday, and I felt that it started very early in the morning and happened in real time. So it lasted almost for the whole day, and it was exhausting and traumatic. And yet I felt that it gave me some insight into what happened on that day. Now, if you want to read the actual account of the story, you'll find it in John chapter 19. And my vision is not the definitive story. The story is there in the Bible. But I'm going to read an excerpt from it because I hope it will do what it did for me, which was to give me a fresh understanding of, on the one hand, how terrible it was for Jesus on that day, but also the truth and the wonder of what happened when Jesus gave up his life with that cry of "It is finished." So here's an excerpt from my encounter. "Finally, we reach the place of the skull. A terrible evil hangs in the air, and for a while even the demons stop swirling and stand back to gloat. I cannot watch as he is nailed to the cross. I bury my head in the wings of the angel and cover my ears so that I cannot hear the sharp bang of hammer or nail or the screams of the other two convicts. I turn to look just as the crosses are being carried to the holes prepared for them. The crazed priests jostle and push to help drop the crosses with an agonizing jar into those holes. And wedges are banged in to keep the crosses upright. The demonic cloud, now huge and realizing still that they have no opposition, are bold enough to manifest visibly. They swirl about Jesus, pushing and poking him, dragging his feet and hands against the nails. The crowd can sense the growing darkness, but they cannot see in the spirit. The angels have come, forming a huge circle about a kilometer across, standing silently as if in terrible shock. I notice that I now have two angels holding on to me. One has a small bowl of water that he gives me whenever it gets too much to watch, and I feel strengthened. For a whole hour between 9 and 10 in the morning, Jesus is so overcome with the demonic assault against him and the sheer physical agony he is experiencing that there is nothing that he can say or do. The blood and sweat trickles into his eyes, stinging them, and he is unable to wipe them away. There is such a look of love in his eyes, a stark contrast to the criminals on each side of him. 'Father, forgive them,' he whispers. All the time, the sky in my encounter is getting darker as the demon cloud becomes bigger and more intense. And when I am able to look through the tears, curled up on my bed, I see that the sky here at Satch is becoming ominously dark too. In my encounter, the darkest hour is the hour between midday and 1 o'clock in the afternoon. By now, the whole scene is velvety dark. I can smell and hear the demons as they swirl unrelentingly about Jesus, and occasionally I see the glint of their forms. During this hour, I feel as if a weight is lifted off my shoulders, and the pure grief I'm feeling begins to mingle with a great sense of gratitude, which makes me sob even more. I cannot see Jesus now for the darkness, but I feel that a new kind of horror is being unleashed on him as he is covered in sin. In the pitch dark, I hear him cry out as if to his daddy, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" I feel the great loneliness as the tear in the Godhead takes place. Then, barely visible, I see a huge, dark form appear in front of Jesus, accompanied by many demons. I hold my breath and cling on to my angels. This is Satan himself. For a long moment, he dares to look straight into the face of Jesus. He spits into those beautiful eyes and leaves a stinking mess to dribble down onto his body. Then, with a great gesture of misplaced triumph, he's gone. Jesus' suffering is so terrible that I long for him to die and bring it to an end. I know that he has the power to give up his life at any time, but he has not completed his purpose. At about 2 o'clock, the black sky turns to a dark grey. Here at Satch, a storm breaks with thunder and lightning. In my encounter, the unceasing tumble of frolicking demons begins to die down, as if they are getting tired of their games. They are still here, but Jesus is able to look around. The crowd is still huge. Many are mocking him and laughing, but dotted about are those that love him. They are overwhelmed with grief and trauma. Jesus is so concerned for them all, he looks around to find each one. Mary and John are clinging to each other. Tears flow down Jesus' battered face as he looks at his mum. "This is your son," he says through the tears, and to John, "This is your mother." After a while, his gaze catches me too. One eye is almost closed from the bruising, but for a long moment, I look into the face of my Jesus, the same Jesus I've sat with in my valley, and I'm heartbroken. "I love you," he whispers. At 2:30, the atmosphere begins to change. There is nothing different to see. The sky is still a very dark grey. Rain thunders on the roof of our house at Satch. Jesus' strength is slipping away. I know he will soon be gone. And I already feel such a great feeling of loss. I'm exhausted and I have cried so much there are no tears left. At 2:55, with a cracked, dry voice, he says, "I am thirsty," to the soldier standing near the cross. The soldier pushes a sponge onto the end of his lance, dips it into wine vinegar, and lifts it to Jesus' dry, cracked lips. He takes a sip and swallows. Then he painfully fills his lungs, and with all his might, he shouts into the universe, "Tetelestai! It is finished!" In the physical realm, a deep thunder is released and the ground shakes with a brief and powerful earthquake, splitting rocks and opening tombs. But in the spiritual realm, there is an atomic explosion which immediately incinerates 10,000 demons. The shockwave spreads out like a dome across the universe. It hits the angelic circle, blowing angels into clouds in the air far above us, and rends the heavens open, restoring the tear in the sky. The Father takes hold of the heavy curtain in the temple and rips it with a loud tearing sound, shredding it from top to bottom. Those who have come to mock Jesus are full of fear and quickly set off for their homes, leaving the area around the crosses empty, except for those who love Jesus, who have been blown to the ground. Within seconds, the angels regain their pose and fly in fast to minister to us. Some just come to comfort, cradling grief-stricken heads. Other angels carry bowls of water from the river of life and begin to wipe away dirt and tears until there are a few dozen people sitting, recovering on the ground. I look up and see Jesus' body, now slumped, lifeless on the cross, and long for angels to minister to him. My angel, feeling my longing, says, "He's gone." Close by me, I'm surprised to see that one of the recovering people is a very large Roman centurion. He is sitting up crying like a child and being ministered to by angels. It takes a whole hour for the group to be standing, still shaking with grief. Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea have set off into the city, but before they go, other Roman soldiers, unaffected by grief, have cruelly broken the legs of the two criminals, allowing them to suffocate. After some discussion, one sticks a lance into Jesus' side and watches the gush of fluid pour out. There are aloes growing amongst the rocks nearby. Some of the weeping women break off fleshy leaves and pile them beneath Jesus' body. Some others set off to buy myrrh from the market, and at about 4:30 the men return with a rigid sleeping mat like a stretcher and piles of linen. They've obtained permission to take Jesus' body down, and there is a brief discussion about what to do with it. There is a sense of urgency about his tomb, and everyone gets to work. Aloe leaves are placed on the sleeping mat. The centurion supervises the uprooting of the cross and calls for iron levers to be brought so that the jagged nails can be prized out of the wood and flesh. Ropes are cut until Jesus' body is at last free from the cross. The crown of thorns lies discarded in the bloody dust. There is no longer any feeling of evil. A heavy peace, like a morning mist, has settled on everyone, but still a very strong sense of grief. Everyone is weeping. Jesus is placed on top of the aloes and a sprinkling of fragrant myrrh. His body is bound with the fresh linen, so that he is firmly fixed to the stretcher. His head and face are bandaged in a separate piece of linen, the blood soon showing through. The sun is low in the sky as the little group reaches the garden tomb. A restful, shady place. The centurion is still with them. The rock is levered into place by the exhausted followers, and darkness begins to fall again. The job is done, and the exhausted group look at each other, faint with grief. We fall into each other's arms for a long time, sobbing until it is completely dark. This is the story of Good Friday, and my friends, that shout to Telestai, which means it is finished, still echoes down through the century and means that there is a way for you and for me to come into the presence of the Father. God bless you today. Father, thank you. How can we ever begin to thank you for a day like Good Friday?